Right. Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Luann.
It's so weird to have a podium and a mic and an audience. I might break out into song. No, I won't. I won't do that to anybody. You know, I was sitting up here thinking, is it an alcoholic thing or is it a human nature thing to walk into any group of people and just automatically think, oh my God, I'm so different. And I'm sitting there looking out at all of you guys and appreciating every person that's here. To listen to my story, which is, you know, the ugliest story and the most beautiful story of my life, all wrapped up into one. And just really thinking about how each of us are connected, everybody in this room, we're all connected, and how you guys are all my people. Because if you're in this room and you don't want to be here and you're pissed off because somebody told you you had to be here, you're my people. If you've had years of sobriety and you're in a place of peace and gratitude, you're my people. If you're tired and this is the last place you wanted to be, but your sponsor told you that you needed to be here, you're my people. So there's really the thought that you guys are all different than me, or I'm all different from you guys. I am different. I'm a weirdo, but you're my weirdos. We're all weird together. And it gives me a lot more comfort to stand up to you guys, stand up in front of you guys, and not stand up to you, and share my story. So my name is Luann, and I am definitely an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hello, I'm happy to be here. I got sober finally for good on May 14th, 2006, and I hesitate to even say that as some sort of, you know, bragging. I'm very, very proud of my sobriety, but I'm only one drink away from being back where I was over 11 and a half years ago, and I need to remember that, and I need to share my story, because with myself, if for nothing else, I was going through all my 12-step work today, and I was telling Elgin that when I look back, you know, 11 years ago, and if I thought that that was a woman that I sponsored, I would think, she is just insane. The stuff I wrote out was just not where I'm at today, and so I want to share where I was at, and if any of you relate, then that would make me really happy. I started drinking kind of young. I think I was in 7th grade. And I always drank like an alcoholic. I didn't always drink all the time, but whenever I started drinking, I absolutely didn't know when to stop. And that's pretty consistent. So even with my first drink, which was to fit in with a group of kids, I was the girl that passed out in the corner. I didn't know when to stop drinking. But drinking was fun for me. I came from a family. My dad was a Shriner, and I don't know if you know Shriners, but they really love to have fun, and they drink a lot, and my dad was the bartender for all the Shriner functions, and so he didn't drink, but I was the youngest kind of all the kids that the Shriners had, and I was like the runner, you know, so he would prepare all the drinks, and I would go run it, and it was fun, and so drinking for me was a lot of fun, and I am still to this day a fun seeker. Life is not good unless I'm laughing. So I started drinking in high school. It was ugly, but I was having fun. So I chalked up all the passing out, all the barfing, all the getting lost in town, having to be babysat. You know, I was the one, I don't know if you guys all, if you are this person or if you partied with this person, I was the person that once I had a drink, everybody was like, okay, who's watching Luann? So I had to be watched. It wasn't concerning to me back then. I was just having fun with it. My friends, I grew up in the same town with all the same people, and my friends all graduated, and they really, all my friends went to college and started off on a life of their own, and they started growing up, and I continued to drink, and I continued to have fun. I went to concerts, you know, it was a really fun time for me. And then I moved out when I got married in 1992, and I don't remember a whole lot of my wedding because, as you know, is typical for me from the beginning, I drink until I can't remember. Blackouts weren't happening for me then, but you know, many, many moments of my life, important moments, are lost to me forever. And that's when alcohol, it was my friend in the beginning. You know, alcohol put me in a comfortable place around other people. Alcohol let me be the silly dork that I am without feeling like stupid. I had an excuse to blame it on the alcohol. And then after I got married, and I actually ended up moving, a job took me out to Utah. That's when alcohol stopped being my friend. And there was a time in that period where it just slowly started to be that friend who talks really bad about you behind your back. But you still like them, and so you still keep them in your life. And you just don't even realize how it's worked against you, how that friend is starting to turn against you. And so I still pursued the party. I was always looking for ways to drink excessively. And that kind of put me in a group of people. You know, I couldn't be with my friends who loved me because they saw how much alcohol was taking from me, and they loved me. And so they were calling me out on that, and I didn't want to listen. I didn't want to hear the negative parts of what I felt was a fun time. But I got into an industry that it's kind of stressful, and I started to, you know, make my own in that industry, and it's a big drinking. There's a lot of people that drink in the job that I do, and I loved that, because not only could I drink a lot with these people that drank a lot, we were all stressed and working too much, and we could use that to justify how much we were drinking. And so it began kind of a manic thing for me at that time. In Utah, you have to plan your drink. You can't, back then, you can't just go to the store. Liquor stores aren't open at, you know, times that you need a drink. You can't just go into a bar. So my disease, which started out with, like, you know, a fun friend of mine, and I feel like I was always born with my disease. Like, the way I think of my alcoholism is that it's a demon that's inside of me, and looking through my writings, I can see me talking to that demon where, you know, any given night I would say, pour it out, go buy more, you know, hide it away from people, drink in front of other people. I was constantly talking and arguing with myself because I didn't want to be drinking. I knew I had a problem, but I didn't want to stop either. That was the God's honest truth. But in Utah, it started to become calculating. I don't know how to better explain that, but like, if I wanted to drink the way I wanted to drink, I had to plan it. I had to make sure that I got off work in time to go to the liquor store, that I had enough liquor in my house. And it, like, that's not a normal, like, people who drink normally don't do that. They don't start at, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon and think, what do I have in my house? Is that going to be enough to get me drunk the way I want to be, you know, by the end of the night, and doing an inventory of how much, you know, alcohol you have in the house. But I didn't know that. I thought that was normal. I thought, you know, all my friends were getting drunk, and that's just what we all did. And so alcoholism started to, like, be a real sinister demon, and it started to get, like, it started out like a little cartoon character inside of me, and we were having fun, and we were friends, and then somewhere along the line, it started to just turn into a dragon, and I was wrestling with it all the time. I moved back. I had my son in Utah, and I didn't drink during that pregnancy, and I had my daughter, and I didn't drink during that pregnancy, but as soon as I had my children, it was, when am I going to be able to drink? So after my daughter was born, I was here. I moved back to Visalia. I really had no friends except for the people in the mortgage business. It's what I do. And it started to be like, we're all my peers. We all drank a lot. But then I started to be that one, again, who had to be watched. And we're talking heavy drinkers. You know, I was the one who was drinking more than all the heavy drinkers. And it never never was enough. Anytime I started drinking, it didn't stop until I passed out, until I threw up, until I blacked out. And that's when, like about 2003, that's when the demon that is my alcoholism, I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones, but it's like that. It's like a flying, nasty demon with teeth, and it scared me to death. And the only way that, I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but the only way I can think of explaining it is that I had to feed it. It wasn't an option at that point when drinking started to become demonic. I would wake up every morning and I would swear, I'm not doing this again. I'm not going to pass out reading a book to my kids, or being in a blackout reading a book to my kids. I'm not going to cook and burn myself up. I'm not going to burn the food. I'm not going to, you know, step on a shard of glass and not even know it because I was in a blackout. All of these things that I did when I was still trying to chase that party, I promised myself every morning for 3 years that I wasn't going to do it. And every time I promised myself that, I meant it. It wasn't me just trying to get the people off my back that were concerned about where I was going with my drinking. I really did mean it with all my heart. And then I'd start the day, I'd be shaking, I would, you know, take a ton of Advil, get through the day, and by 3 o'clock, it's like the shame I had from the morning, the shakes I had from the morning, the, you know, the promises that I had made that morning were all gone. There was nothing that would stop me from going to the alcohol store, and buying all that I could. At the time, I think at the worst of my drinking, I was probably up to 2 full bottles of wine a night. But then it started to be where they sold the, you know, wine in boxes, and it was, who knows? I don't even know. I tried everything to stop drinking. I swore I would only do 2 glasses a night. But then with the boxes, there's no way of measuring out what those 2 glasses are, so I can get a 32-ounce, you know, big gulp, and then I just had one drink. But the whole time, it was a game that I was playing with, not with everybody on the outside. Like, the external consequences that I suffered, they were there, but my alcoholism was all a battle with myself. It was like I was 2 different people, and the conversations that I would have come about 3 o'clock when I wanted to go to the liquor store were real conversations that I had with myself, you know, and I wrote down in my 12-step work that I fought myself all the time. I didn't want to drink that way, and I don't know how else to explain the low that I got, the things that I went through, the shame that I went through. I can catalog them out. I thought I was a functional alcoholic. So if you think you're a functional alcoholic, you're my person too. And functional meant that I can at least hold down a job. That's basically all that was, because inside I was rotting like something rancid, like rancid meat. But I remember being at a corporate function, and I had a title, and I thought I was all that, and I was at the bar, and they had free alcohol. Well, that to me and my demon was like, oh, I'm going to get my money's, I'm going to get your money's worth out of this session. And I would drink manically. I would just pour me another. And I remember sitting at the bar, one of the worst stories in Luann Land was I was sitting up at the bar with all the owners of this company in Texas. So it was kind of a bigger company. And I had too many, and I had no idea when that last one was that put me over the edge, but I completely passed out on the bar stool and went toppling over onto the concrete, or, you know, the tile floor in front of, you know, everybody. And that was a big low for me, because it was a overnight thing, and I had to do the walk of shame the next day, where you get those looks, you know, where, oh, how are you feeling today? And, you know, people were, you know, trying to tell me what I did, but I didn't want to know. I was, ignorance is bliss. Please don't tell me what happened last night. And, you know, you get bits and pieces of it, and that shame that the only thing you could do is kind of laugh it off or run away. It was awful. I remember going to a concert because I love music, and again, I'm still chasing fun. And I remember I was there up front at a show, and I was enjoying the show, and I was just completely drunk, as always, and I completely wet myself. And my my alcoholism told me it was okay to just stay there and be in this crowd and not even a concern. Like, it stole from me not just my happiness, not just my fun, but it stole from me my morality. It stole from me my the things I wanted for myself, not stuff, but just what I wanted for myself. That's what my alcoholism took from me in a slow, calculating, sinister, cunning, baffling, and powerfully way. I was left with nothing when I finally decided that I needed help inside. You know, I still had people who loved me, thank God. I'm blessed beyond measure for people who stood by me. They shouldn't have. But I didn't want to go to AA. The last thing I wanted to do was walk through a door of an AA meeting. So in my head, I thought, I'm going to go to an outpatient program. And I went in, and sure enough, they said I was an alcoholic. And I signed up, and, you know, they told me I had to pee in a cup. I peed in a cup. They had me go to the two counseling meetings a week in the office, and then they told me I had to go to three AA meetings. And I said, well, no, this is why I want to go to you. You're supposed to fix me. I don't want to go to AA. But I did, because, you know, that's what they told me to do, and I was at a point where I needed everybody off my back. When I first got sober the first time, it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about, like, fixing that demon and shrinking it. It was all about getting the people who loved me and were concerned about me off my back. It was about my keeping my job. You know, my employer was concerned about my drinking, and so it was all about other people. And I can look back on it now, but at the time I really thought I was going to do it. But now it was like, what I was hoping to get out of that outpatient thing was, I was really, really hoping that they would teach me how to be able to have two glasses of wine a night, or one, or just, you know, drink like those people who can go to a bar and just leave a half glass of beer, you know, and go home. I still don't understand that. I still look at tables with people who leave a half a pitcher of beer and think, what are you doing? But I didn't know it at the time. That's what I was hoping for. And so I went through all that stuff, and I did, I think it was 6 months was the time, and then I graduated, and I thought I was all good. I thought, this is great. I got what I needed to get out of this, and I'm going to go on and live my life. And that lasted about, I think when I was reading, it was like 2 months. And what happened was, so at the time, 2 months in, I was really feeling good. I wasn't, you know, like totally conning myself, but I really felt like the demon had quieted down. It still was there, but it wasn't as loud. I wasn't having conversations with myself all day about drink, don't drink, drink, don't drink. But it was quiet enough to where I thought, I'm going to go out to this wedding. And I took my kids to a good friend's sister's wedding in Arizona. And it was just me and my two children. And there was the, you know, if you've been to weddings, they usually pass around the champagne to give the toast. And they give you an option to have cider for either, you know, people who don't drink or kids. And like at that moment, my demon, like, for fear of sounding like a complete lunatic, like, it said, go ahead and have that drink. I knew that I was an alcoholic. There wasn't a question about that. But I thought I could drink like a normal person again. And what happened, I took, it was only like a 2-inch, you know, a little tiny little flute of champagne. And I mean, it was probably a gulp of champagne. But it sent, it was like I put a key into the cage where I kept my demon and opened it up, and it came roaring out. And all I can do, I was sitting watching everybody have a good time, and all I can think of was, well, now it's on, because I knew it wasn't going to last. I knew I was going to need to get the most out of this drunk. So it ended up being a 6-week drunk. And I, at the wedding, I left my kids with people I don't know. They were 6 and 8, literally with people I didn't know. I only knew the bride and her sister. And checked into the, went up into the bride's room and ordered 2 bottles of wine on her tab, and ended up drunk. And I don't even really know who rounded up my kids and got them back into our room. But then from that moment on, when I gave the megaphone back to my alcoholism, it was, there was no way I could not drink, because I knew the only option was to stop. So I was going to drink all that I can. again. And I drank and I drank and I drank manically. Probably, I mean, I don't remember much. I'll just say that. I don't remember much of the next 6 weeks. It was a lot of blackouts. And it was really scary. It was really scary for me because it felt like I literally sank into hell. And that's where I needed to be. I know I hated hearing people say that. I hated hearing people when I came into the meetings tell me that they had all these years because I didn't believe them at all. But I was at this point where, like, obviously I'm killing myself. So either I'm going to go on this path and die, or I'm going to have to suck it up and see what these people are talking about. So, but I'm not going to lie. I didn't come to AA and think, yay, this is great. I came to AA and thought, you guys are all lying. I don't believe that you made it a year. You know, I don't believe that New Year's came and you didn't toast a glass. I really was convinced that everybody just figured a way to drink every once in a while because I couldn't wrap my head. My whole life was spent drinking. I didn't know how to have a good time. I didn't know how to have a bad time. I didn't know how to be at home by myself without drinking. Literally, I was outside of my skin when I got sober. And so my hat's off to everybody here that has, you know, a short, whatever you think is a short period of time. If you have one day, that's awesome. Because I remember those days very clearly. I remember not being able to sleep. I remember sweating all the time. I remember being extremely angry at everyone who was sober and everybody who wasn't sober, but especially the people who were telling me, you know, keep it simple and one day at a time and all of those things. But I stayed because I was petrified of myself. I needed someone to hold my hand because I was scared of me. And so I stayed and I got a sponsor, and she kind of intimidated me a little bit, but she worked as a good program, and I was done. I was at that point where my knees were on the ground. And so I did what she told me to do, sometimes willingly and sometimes just because I didn't have any better idea. And it took me a long time to go through the steps. It took me 3 years, but I did it. I can honestly say that I was very rigorous about it. I did what she told me to do, and I told on myself if I did it, you know, halfway. I was really honest with her, and I really wanted the demon to shut up. And it did. It started to quiet down, and every day that it would quiet down was a day that I could listen. Because when it was screaming at me, I couldn't hear what everybody was saying. And as I started to work the steps, I resented each step. Each step that came, I didn't want to do it at all, but I did it. And I did it to the best of my ability at the time. And what I would really like anybody to hear about my story is that it started to work. And once the demons started to quiet down, I started to realize that I was just the shell of a person. I had no idea what I liked. I had no idea what really made me happy, what I really thought was fun. I had no idea, because every time I would go out and try that, it was the demon drinking, and it was all false. So I didn't really know what made me sad. Crazy, but I felt empty. And slowly but surely, when I started working these steps, I started to find myself, if that doesn't sound too cheesy. And I started to forgive myself and all the crap that I did, because I did do a lot of horrible things to people. I used a lot of people in my life so that I threw my demon onto other people so that they would just, it's better to have me drunk than to have me be the hag that I was, you know. And so I used a lot of people in the course of alcoholism, but the person I damaged the most was definitely me. And who knew that underneath all of that, when I can get the demon to shut up, there's a person I can actually like. It didn't feel like I can like me at all back when I was drinking. I wasn't a very likable person. I was a very fake person. But slowly and surely working these steps, finding the peace that's there to be found, and working through, especially the things that I really fought the most are absolutely the things in my sobriety that have given me the biggest blessings. I didn't want to make any amends. In fact, I told Boo, I don't know if you remember, but I told her, no, the outpatient program said that I didn't have to make amends. They said I can skip that part. You know, I was all taken care of with the, you know, insurance payment. But I was petrified, and I was certainly not ready to make any amends at step 1, 2, and 3. I was pissed off at God. Check my time. I was really, like, I brought a lot of anger to this program. And when everybody started talking about God, I was like, this is what God put. He put this demon inside of me. So whatever you're talking about, I'm not really liking. AA gave me the freedom to find a higher power of my own understanding. And I didn't know what that meant, but once I started getting rid of all the fears and all the things my parents, you know, told me as I was growing up, I was really able to find trust. And that's all I found at first, was just a little bit of trust and faith. That's all that was needed, because I just needed to work on that through the steps. And when I did my amends, these blessings came in, especially the ones that I was really ready to just hear their anger and shoulder it and try to just keep my mouth shut through it. And all I got, this is just my experience, I know it's not everybody's experience, but with every amends that I made, all I got was an outpouring of love. The crazy things that I did, I was really sorry for them. It wasn't just, this is what I need to do to get sober. I was really, really contrite and thorough. That's the key. You know, I didn't do the half-baked job that I wanted to do. But when I came to step 11, like 2 years and 8 months into the start of it, I hit a block. And I couldn't shut my head off to save my life. And I had a sponsor who, she just wouldn't let me move forward. So I stayed. She would have me do all of these things, you know, like set an egg timer and try to turn your mind off for 30 seconds. And, you know, she would give me guided meditations. And I thought, oh, my God, this is a bunch of malarkey. I don't want to do this at all. And I finally told her after, I think, 3 months of sitting on that step that this wasn't going to work. This wasn't going to work. And I'm really thankful, and I really try to be that to the women that I've worked with in the past, because she would have had every right to just be like, okay, Lynn, move forward, and we'll just keep working on this. But she didn't, and she made me stay there. And there was one, like, I had a spiritual experience, and that's all. It's personal to me, and I don't want to, you know, sound like I'm this total new age yahoo, but I finally felt that connection. I finally felt I wasn't alone. I finally felt like I understood that my alcoholism wasn't a punishment. It was a way to get to the place that I'm at. Like, and that's another thing that's been a blessing in my sobriety, is that I see pain in a different way. I no longer see pain as some sort of punishment that I'm walking through because I deserve it. It's just a lesson that I got to learn. And where I'm at right now is like, let me just get through this lesson as quickly as possible. So if I'm in a painful situation, I turn to these steps every single time. And mainly it's selfish, because I don't want to stay there in that place of being discontent and resentful and mad or sad or any of those things that are painful to go through. I have found that when I get real with my program and I start doing a 10-step on any kind of situation that I'm pissed off in, it without fail, I'm rescued from myself. And that's not something I found in my life until I hit the low that I had to hit, the ugly low that I had to hit to finally, it's like I just feel the universe used this disease to kick me down, because I'm stubborn and I think that I know what's best. My brain will start, you know, I joke about Luann Land, but I'll just touch on that a little bit. Luann Land is a place where, like, I know everything and I get to make the rules, and we don't need to argue about it. Like, if I disagree with you, you're just out. And we don't need to, like, discuss it, and you don't need to, like, talk about it. You're just out, and I'll, you know, be nice to you, to your face, and then, but you're out of Luann Land. And many, many doctors got kicked out of Luann Land because the doctors were telling me that my liver panel was high, and my doctors were telling me that I really should start, stop drinking so much. And so those doctors were no longer allowed to see me. And that's the craziness that I got to escape from working these steps. So, you know, after 3 years, I finally found the peace, and I finally was able to put the demon back into the cartoon form, and he's still there, he, she, whatever. And I still go through stuff. In fact, I didn't go through the worst of the worst in my life until I got sober. When I got sober and, you know, finally found a peace in my life, that's when it was like the rug got pulled out from under me. I went through a divorce. I lost my house. I lost my father. I lost my grandma, and I lost my sister to this damn disease. And it's really tough to be able to help people in this disease, like to help women get sober and not be able to help your own sister. When she was in a car wreck, or a motorcycle accident, her blood alcohol level was 0.3. And if I could have given her my sobriety, if I could give any one of you, if any one of you are out there where I was 11 and a half years ago, waking up every morning, I'm not going to do this again, I'm not going to do this again, I'm not going to do this again, and then every night going, oh my God, I did this again, how did I do this again? I would trade my sobriety with any one of you, because for temporarily, I'd want it back. But if you could just see that. We were all angry when we got here because I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to stop drinking. I still want to be that person who can drink at a bar. I really do. That's self-awareness on my part. But the gift of sobriety and the peace that I have today, where I can look out at people and really just be happy for their happiness, and that's not just me blowing smoke. I really have found a way to love people from a place of more purity. And that, I think, honestly, is because this program taught me how to love myself, and not in an arrogant way, but just that I think we alcoholics have a big service to provide to the world, and I think that we can't do that until we get our crap together, because there are people out there and they're waiting for our story, and they need to hear just exactly what we have to tell them, but we can't tell it to them until we get it, until we get the demon back down under control. And I keep that demon small by working these steps all the time. I may not go to as many meetings as I probably should, but I work these steps every day. If I'm not in a good place, I know I've done something wrong. And I pick up my book, and usually it's getting faster and faster. I can figure it out in a short period of time. And I'm to the place right now where I'm like, I want to do those amends right away, because I don't want to go home and feel like crap, you know, like I do when I've done something really bad to somebody. So it's given me the motivation to say I'm sorry, to admit when I'm wrong, because I'm still wrong all the time. I have to do a 10 step every day to keep on my the path that I have found, because it's really, really good here. It's really peaceful and it's really fun. Who knew that I could have more fun sober? And the good thing about it is that I get to remember everything. I'm not soiling my pants, and I'm not embarrassing myself in front of the CEOs unless I choose to do it, which, you know, sometimes I do. But I get to have that choice, and I get to have control over myself, and I get to have control over my drinking, and decide every day that I want to be a good person that day and make those choices. This program has taught me how to do that. I didn't know how to do that before. I only knew how to take. And that's pretty much it. That is my story. And I just hope that if anybody got any hope for your path out of that, that would really make my night. So thank you for listening and for letting me talk.